Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's going to be a hijinks episode of Homo Sapiens today, listeners, because while it will still be the soothing bubble bath, husband's going mad in the garden right in front of me. I'm indoors. There's glass between us because I'm warm. We're clearing the garden. I say we in the grander sense of the word as I sit here in my slippers talking to you. But there's a wood chipper involved, and that wood chipper is going to start up at any point. So throughout this conversation, you're going to hear at some point, Literally, I'm not even joking. Can you hear that? I'm going to have to move venues. Has your Christmas been as restful as mine? I hope so. It's a problem with being gay. We love a project. Let me move to the kitchen. Right, change of venue. Much, much calmer in here. The only sound risk we have is the dog barking at anything that moves past the house within a 4 mile radius. So I think we'll be fine. Won't we, Ridley? It's always very calm in here with you, isn't it? We've got a lovely episode of Homo Sapiens for you today. It doesn't involve trees being chopped down. It doesn't involve dogs barking. It involves a wonderful, wonderful man, Mohsin Zaidi. He is a writer who wrote a memoir called A Dutiful Boy. A Dutiful Boy is about his experience of growing up gay as a Muslim. It's an incredibly beautifully written book, and Mohsin is just a really interesting person, full stop, book or no book. And he grew up in East London, the son of an immigrant family, and ended up going to Oxford, which is what his family really wanted for him. But throughout the thread is this one thing about the fact that he really didn't want to be gay. Like, it tore him up inside, which is just heartbreaking to read, but also now is very happy and madly in love and all the rest of it. Not that you have to be madly in love to make a happy ending, but he loves himself and his family love him. But he just writes beautifully. The way that he tells his story is, I find it fascinating with LGBTQ plus stories, where it's just a case of, no matter how many times you hear someone's story, their own detail is beautiful, you know, and it's such a lovely chat. It's a properly deep chat that we have, actually, and I for one love it. Now, how on earth have all your Christmases been? We've got more voice notes actually from you all about your version of Christmas and all of that, which is really lovely, and thank you so much for continuing to send them in. Have you caught up with all the Christmas content? We had Sean Fay on the show, writer of The Transgender Issue and Argument for Justice. Beautiful chat. Our Christmas special with Andrew Garfield. What a reaction. What a man. What a great chat. And did you have a chance to watch Tick, Tick, Boom over Christmas? God, it's good. Stay in touch with us, listeners. It's hello at homosapienspodcast.com, at homosapiens on Instagram. And I want to hear all about your New Year's resolutions. I want to hear how you're getting on in these strange times. And please keep sending your agony uncles. We love them, we love them, we love them. And contribute to any agony uncles you've heard before. You know, the one we did with Andrew last week. Let us know what your additions to that answer are. I was pretty hard on Granny, wasn't I? Stay connected. And also, on Instagram, we got all news and culture and all that stuff. It's brilliant. Just go there. You'll love it. And also, while you're there, go to at Homo Sapiens Podcast on Facebook. Now, my Christmas was soothing, nutritious, delicious. I did go a bit mad on the lights. I'll level with you. You can get these ones off the internet, I'll say, which are battery operated and remote controlled, and you can time them to come on at certain times. And I just, once you start wrapping them around a tree, you kind of can't stop. And then I was wrapping them around a bush, and then I was up a ladder wrapping them around another tree, and then I wrapped them around another tree, and then I lit a fire pit. I don't know what was up with me, to be quite honest with you. Now then, let's have a look at some emails. Rodolfo, thank you for the lovely message. Rodolfo's written to us. Howdy, Christopher. Howdy, Rodolfo. Big hugs to everyone on Team Homo Sapiens. Thank you, Rodolfo. They're a great team. What a gang we are. You've been a bright spot in another year of, well, the less said about it, the better. Oh, thanks, Rodolfo. May you and yours be surrounded by all you need to make your Yuletide gay, and may 2022 bring the start of something better for us all. So right, Rodolfo. Happy holidays, Rodolfo. In Texas, no less. Thank you, Rodolfo. Thank you so much for writing in. And boy, do I love a gay Yuletide. Hey, you know what as well? The Christmas album I always put on that I think is overlooked is Richard Hawley, Cole's Corner. I'm going to play it literally after this, actually. It's the most Christmassy music ever. And I love it. I was talking about asking for your recommendations about gay godparenting. And Craig got in touch. I was saying, oh, can you think of good presents for the godchildren? And Craig sent in, where is it, Craig? A brilliant thing, which was like this cheese-making thing. Because I was saying I don't want it to be too wasteful. And just, you know, sending plastic around the world. And Craig's suggestion was this thing called the Big Vegan Cheese-Making Kit. Perfect gift for the little vegan in your life. £28.50. Ooh, they can share it then, all 12 of them. Find out a bit more about it and the creative small business that sells it here. And then it's on Not on the High Street cheese making kit, which looks really cool. And the kids would love this. Craig, thank you so much for that. What a brilliant, ingenious present. And not just for godchildren, quite frankly. Now, let me press play on... We've got another message about godparenting.
Hey Chris, I'm just listening to the wonderful Sean Fay episode. Thank you very much for that. And Ridley, as a co-pilot for the episode, is doing a fabulous job. And I was wondering about something you said, because you mentioned godchildren and that you have so many and that you think it's a gay thing. It was just kind of a comment, but one that I found really interesting because I had never heard of that. And, you know, I'm not a godparent. I'm not sure about my queer friends. I wonder whether it's possibly a gender thing or culture in some way. Well, I found it very interesting, and I'd love to hear more about that. What your impression is of that, and maybe what other people think. And also, I loved hearing about the Polish LGBTQIA+ library, and I'd love to be in touch and, you know, maybe feature that in some way on my Queer Lit podcast as well, because it's such important work.
By all means, please, let's support the library in any way we can. Be in touch. Let's chat. Yeah, godparents. I don't know. I mean, I feel like... Listeners, I want you to write in and contribute. I want you to tell me what you think about this. I think... There was a history of feeling like gay men specifically couldn't have kids. So therefore you could make them a godparent as a kind of way to let them have some form of kid. But I don't know. It's sort of, you know, there's no pretty low on research on this. But I don't know. I just felt like that was the case. The other thing is, like, some people have often said, oh, well, you're always like... And I don't agree with this, and I don't like it, but I'm just reporting. You know, people say, oh, well, you know, you're glamorous, and, you know, you always have nice stuff, so you'll be good at that, and you always give good presents. Gays give good presents because we're thoughtful. And I mean every single one of us. And when I say gays, sorry, I mean the LGBTQIA+ spectrum. We're thoughtful people because we've been through stuff. That's my opinion anyway. Feel free to shoot me down. I don't know. And that's my experience. And there was me thinking that I just had to be a godparent to thousands of children. Maybe I should have said no to some. But I love them all in their own special way. I've obviously got favourites. Mm. That's a joke for any of them listening. I imagine one of them will be soon. Soon old enough to listen. Not the stuff that comes out my mouth. Blimey. Potty mouthed. Also, with all your stories over Christmas of, you know, hitting people, stealing things. I mean, I felt like we were all a bunch of pirates when we listened to those voice notes. Very funny. all of you. We've got some more voice notes, actually. Let's have a listen to a few more of your voice notes about what your Christmases are like. Let's have a listen to Richie.
So, going back in the closet over Christmas time with family, you know, it's never something that I've been asked by family members to do. It's never even necessarily something that I've consciously made a decision to do. It's definitely been subconscious. You know, I came out when I was 18 and I'm now 35, and it's just never been something I've ever felt comfortable with, especially at that time of year in that sort of family dynamic. You know, I've got brothers and sisters, and over the years their partners have been introduced to the dynamic along with nieces and nephews, and I've always sat there feeling like it's never something, it's just not something I'll ever be able to join in with, and especially now I've got nieces and nephews of sort of teenage years, it's definitely something that causes me a lot of fear and dread and shame.
Richie, thank you for that lovely message. It's interesting that these going back in the closets are unspoken requests. It's very interesting how it's implicit that something needs to happen. Tim has been in touch as well.
So I feel like I have to go back partly into the closet over Christmas. What I mean by that is my family know about me and my sexuality. They maybe don't know my full personality, if that makes sense. So I have to present a version of myself, which is kind of the version that I was when I was growing up, which wasn't my true authentic self, if that makes any sense. And I'm sure I'm not the only person that does this. It's probably quite common. But I feel like I have to present the family appropriate or acceptable version of myself, particularly around Christmas time, because that's just the easiest thing for everybody else. So maybe not me, but that's just what I've got used to. So, you know, that's what I do every time.
Exactly, Tim. You shouldn't have to take the weight. You know, LGBT people and beyond, but any kind of subsection of society, we're very used to sort of taking the emotional weight of a room. Like, we don't want to upset everybody. We don't want to freak anybody out. And it's a lot of labour that you shouldn't have to be doing. I think we catastrophise the results as well. I'm not saying us. I'm talking about the people who want us to stay in the closet, who want us to clip our big gay wings. It's a cost. The emotional labour of it all is a cost. And we need to remember that cost is one that you should not have to be doing, even if you do it instinctively. Thank you so much for all those beautiful messages about your Christmases. It's a really interesting time for all of us. And I'm so pleased we've got each other at this funny old time of year. And Homo Sapiens Heights is open throughout the new year into Blue January or Dry January. We'll be talking about that, actually. We're here all the time. So, you know, if you're ever feeling a bit blue, what with all the craziness in the world, consider us a nice warm constant. Now then, on to today's chat with the amazing Mohsin Zaidi, author of the best-selling memoir, A Dutiful Boy. Here it is, listeners. I feel like I know you already, but we've never met.
Yeah, I've got that a lot recently, funnily enough.
Really?
Wow, because of the book that I published.
Because I feel like I know you, and I feel like we've spoken when we haven't. I have yet to say to you how much I loved your book.
Thank you.
What I really loved was you were never afraid to tell the detail of something, and within the detail is the beautiful stuff that we can all relate to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did you feel, when you're writing that stuff, very unsure as to whether that was the right stuff to be writing?
Well, I just wrote what came from the heart, I guess. So it wasn't, I wasn't very discerning, much to my editor's dismay. So the original length of the book was double the size that it currently is. And it's funny because when you write a book, people are like, oh no, you know, it's so much work writing a book. Actually, the writing is the fun bit. The awful bit is the editing. Because yes. Then you get like, you know, editors. I had a wonderful editor, and she just said, look, it's ultimately your decision, but I would lose like this chapter. And I was looking at the chapter going, oh my God, that's like a week of my life I'm never going to get back. But I really respected her and I trusted her judgment. And so if she gave it the snip, then I gave it the snip.
Yes, and you know that they're doing it because they have your best and its best interests at heart, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And she had, so her name's Arzu Tahsin, and she worked on Malala's book, and she worked on Khalid Hosseini's two books. I think she's got a third now. But and when we first sent her the draft to see whether she would do it. I kind of had my fingers crossed, and we had a call, and she was so lovely about it. And it was a pleasure to work with her. And I did really respect her opinion. But as you say, it was really great to have somebody else, because I'd spent so long on my own writing. And then you've got this entire book and you're really insecure about whether or not it's a pile of shit, to be honest. And so to have somebody read it and say, there is loads of good stuff here, and there is some shit stuff as well. It was great to have her support.
Did you ever find yourself thinking as you were deleting a chapter, I wonder if Malala had to put up with this?
Malala. Yeah, I bet she didn't. No, I didn't. Probably not in that kind of, not in that tone, but I definitely thought, it would have been really cool to be the person who helps Malala tell her story, because that is an amazing story. So
yes.
Probably not Malala didn't have to put up with this shit, but definitely thinking about Malala writing a book. Also because I'm Pakistani heritage, so Malala I'm a big fan of.
You don't want to have Malala in your head as you're trying to write your own story, I imagine, because...
Or Khalid Hosseini.
Yeah. I'd love to read the chapters that got deleted. But one of the things that someone said when they were reviewing it in The Guardian was that, and I'm probably going to get all the description wrong here, but by the way, this ends nicely. but it was sort of talking about how there can be a trope in memoirs about people from Southeast Asian families, from Muslim families, about the kind of demonization of those families and breaking free from that.
Mm-hmm.
And that can contain undertones of like, once you break free and come to us, i.e. Britain as what it allegedly once was or something, that is freedom, that is acceptance, that is all those things. And they were talking about that in the review. And I wondered if that was in your mind, knowing you were stepping into a sort of, that's the territory that is quite quite well trodden for those kinds of books.
Yeah, I don't know if it was in my mind politically. I think what was more in my mind was a need not to vilify my family, because they're not villains. In fact, quite the opposite. I often say that to the extent there are any heroes in the book, it's my parents and my siblings, it's not me. And it was really important to me to demonstrate how hard it was for them and why, because I didn't want to become the anti-Muslim narrative, because there are so many stereotypes and I guess misstatements about what it means to be a Muslim in Britain today. And it was really important to me not to feed those. So there was a kind of a broader thing about protecting my community, but also a very specific thing about protecting my parents, because yeah, they hated the fact that I was gay, but so did I. Like I didn't kind of come out and suddenly I was like, oh, this is fantastic. For the longest time, I dreamt of this kind of magical button that I could press that would make me straight. And I had an incentive, a built-in incentive, to get over it, but they didn't. And we were all raised in the same community and household and faith. So yeah, I think demonstrating how hard it was for them was really important. But also because I wanted other parents reading it to be able to sympathize and recognize their own experience. But then in the hope that... there are no spoilers really, but my parents end up by the end being really loving and accepting of my sexuality. And I hoped that by reflecting an experience that parents have of finding it really hard would help other parents in their journey. But that wasn't going to be possible if I presented these, you know, evil characters.
Maybach, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hold up. What was that? boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mm. And they're doing it to try and protect you in their own way.
Absolutely. You know? Even when they, you know, I write about the fact that my dad called a witch doctor to the house to try and cure me. And that was probably the hardest in terms of my relationship with them. Because even though there was no physical abuse, that felt like a violence inflicted upon me. Because I do think that conversion therapy, whether it's mental or physical, is a violence that's inflicted upon the queer community. Mm. And to see that in their love, my parents were able to inflict violence upon me, made me sit up and think, okay, how much of this should I subject myself to going forward?
When you say how much of this subject yourself to going forwards, do you mean from your family or just in life in general?
No, I meant from my family, because right. I had, after coming out to them, I had spent years holding on to them, you know, because they had raised me in this house of love. And so for so long, I used that love, the energy, to hold on to them and say, I'm not going to let go until you accept me. But that moment with the witch doctor is one of those moments where I thought, okay, maybe it is time to walk away from this.
Would you elaborate a bit on that day? Because it's quite an amazing part of the book.
So I had told my dad, I'd come out to my dad a week earlier, and his initial reaction was to tell me that he loved me and that I was his son. And I had my bags packed upstairs, and he said I wasn't going anywhere, that this was my home.
Which was a real surprise, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I had my bags packed, and I had I was going to go and stay with the parents of a university friend until I started my job as a lawyer, which was coming up in a few months. I had a whole plan. Mm. And my uncle was there because we were worried about physical violence. And my dad had this beautiful reaction, which I wasn't expecting. And I did think at the time, this is too good to be true. And then a week later, I was in the library, and I just kept getting messages from my brother and from my dad saying, when are you coming home? And it was a Sunday. And I thought, this, something's up. So I went home, and there was an old man waiting, a Pakistani guy waiting in the living room. And at first he just asked me to go for a walk. So we went for a walk, and he said, I understand that you've told your dad something. Can you please tell me? And so I said, yeah, I'm gay. And he said, who told you that? And my response was puzzled, because I thought, nobody told me. I just know. And then he was like, well, how do you know? And I thought, well, I could fill you in on some details, but I don't think you'll want those. But then eventually we kind of, you know, I said, I just know. And his response was to say, well, I've helped people like you and they're not gay anymore. Mm. And I was arguing back and forth and nothing was landing. And I remember just thinking, why can't I get through to this guy? And eventually I just said, look, are you gay? And he paused and he looked like I'd kind of sworn at his mum. And he said, no, of course not. How dare you? And I said, okay, well, if you're not, then you've got no idea whether these people are lying to you, do you? Because you go into a house, you exploit these vulnerabilities that these people and their families have. And then in order to get you to go away, they lie to you. Yeah. And he said I was the most stubborn man he'd ever met. And I was quite proud of that. And then he marched me back home. Then he tried to give me an ointment to, and he said that if you drink this every day, eventually you'll be cured. And my dad, I said no. And my dad said, please do it for me. And I said to my dad that the reason that I couldn't drink it was for him, because every day that I drank the ointment was one more day that he thought that this was going to change, and it wasn't.
Mm. There's such a fundamental point in what you're saying about how he said, oh, I cured people. And you're like, well, they would have just lied to you to get you to go away. And that's making people go back in the closet. And that's really sad and really dangerous.
Mm. Yeah. It is. And that's why I write a lot about banning conversion therapy. And I really hope the government hurries up and gets its act together on that, because I was really lucky, right? Like I was about to become a lawyer at a big law firm. I was moving out of the house. I had been trained in how to argue. I knew the difference between right and wrong. I wasn't vulnerable anymore. But most of the time, these kids that are being subjected to this horrible treatment, quote unquote, they're really vulnerable. Like 5 years earlier, if that same man had come to the house, I would have downed the whole bottle in one go, you know?
Yeah. You really, really didn't want to be gay, right? No,
absolutely not.
But I think what's interesting is because the, you know, the sort of subtitle or whatever the proper word for it is, a memoir of a gay Muslim's journey to acceptance.
Yeah.
But actually, it's just as much your family's as well. I think that is perhaps the slant that we haven't seen. I'm almost like, I kind of want your mum to write her version.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, so first of all, the subtitle changed for the paperback, and for that very reason, because I think the problem, I mean, that subtitle was not my idea, but the problem was that it too narrowly focused on one part of what is a much bigger story. So the reason it's a bigger story is because it tells a story about class and about race. But it's also a bigger story because, as you say, it's not my story, it's our story. And, you know, I said this earlier, but the real inspiration, the real kind of cheering moments in the book are not when I come out, it's when my family suddenly are able to find it in their hearts to accept me for who I am. And actually, the way that came about was a few years before writing the book, I managed to convince my mum to go to this, it was called the Big Queer Iftar. And Iftar is the Muslim ritual of breaking fast during the month of Ramadan. So somebody had organized this huge kind of dinner for Muslims who are fasting from the queer community. And I took my mum and I told like one person, oh, this is my mum. And then it spread like wildfire around the room. And by the end, there were literally a queue of people lining up to speak to her because they couldn't believe that there was a parent in the room. And wow. I remember thinking at the time, I need to find a way of bottling this, so to speak. I need to find a way of showing people what's possible. And that's partly what inspired the book.
Yeah, and also to show people that it takes a minute for people, because we all react to something with the tools that are in our hands at that moment.
Yeah.
But by learning something massive about someone, which actually shouldn't be massive, but, you know, by learning something about someone, you're on the beginning of a journey and to discover and learn. And if you, you know, because I think, am I right in saying both your parents said when you told them, like, we love you?
Yeah.
But, you know, they're doing what they can with the tools that they have. And while it might be a difficult conversation, I'm thinking for people in your position who are listening is what I'm talking, is where I'm going with this. It might not also, it doesn't end like that. It might just be the moment that you have to work through and work together. And there's your mum going to a queer iftar. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely with what you've just said. I think it's really important to remember that your first reaction to something is never your only reaction to something. And yeah. It's easy to forget that, right? Because when I was coming out to my parents or thinking about it, all I ever fixated on was that moment and how they would respond. But that moment lasts like 10 seconds, a minute, an hour. And then that hour passes and that day passes and that week passes. And when you're on one side of it, it can feel like you're never going to see the other side. Like literally you can feel like your life is in peril. But once you've gone past that point, you realize that things change, things evolve, albeit really slowly sometimes. And one of the biggest things I get loads and loads of messages online from people all over the world. And one of the most important things I say is just to have patience, because if it's difficult for us as queer people living in this heteronormative society, then it's inevitable that it's not going to be straightforward for some of our parents as well.
Exactly. And I don't know, there's something in there about, I understand people have very individual situations and they are very difficult, but I do think there is something in there about not making your mind up for them about how they're going to feel and going, you're a person I love. we're going to do this together. You're going to be okay with this, and I'm going to help you understand that.
Yeah.
So what was your mum like at the iftar?
So the great thing about my parents, I'm sure this is true of lots of parents, but it's definitely true of Pakistani parents, is however upset they might be about something, if somebody, for example, comes to your house, you will offer them tea, you will ask them how they are, you will force feed them lots of like samosas and pakora and like any food you've got in the fridge. You'll insist they take food home because that's the beauty of my community. And yeah. So my mum, when she was put in this environment, that communal sense in her just came to the fore, as I knew it would, because she can't help but be a wonderful human being because she is a wonderful human being. But it's interesting because I think we know our parents better than anybody else does usually. And I could just see that it was a mask, that it was a facade, that she was being really lovely, but that it was hard work, and that it was draining for her, and that she was having to fight something internally, that there were demons that were having to struggle. And it was almost, the reason I could see it was in between conversations. She would just go into herself, and the smile would fade before it then returned. And it was in the fading of that smile that the mask slipped for a moment. And so I could see how hard it was for her. And that made me feel really guilty. But at the same time, I knew that throwing her in at the deep end was the only way of getting her eventually to learn to swim.
Really? I remember when I first started going out as a young gay man on the scene, and my friend pulled someone and we ended up staying over at their house. And in the morning, we all woke up in this house. I had slept in a room on my own, but he had slept in this room with this person who he was seeing. They were sort of seeing each other. And I remember walking past the hall and they were in bed together in the morning. And I looked in and they started talking to me from the bed. And if you had asked me my feelings on my life at that point, I would have been like, I'm totally fine with being gay, don't care, whatever. But actually, it completely freaked me out that seeing two guys in bed opposite each other. And I was like, now I look back and I'm like, I think it's because I was gay at night. I would go out, you know what I mean? And I would be that at night. But this was like a whole different thing that I was having this really intense reaction to, despite being someone who had decided they were gay. They were happy with it. My family were kind of cool with it. Society is what it is. But so then I imagine, you know, your mum being really new to it all, you know, and I'm not saying I'm cautious of saying that's anything to do with, you know, her background. I'm just saying it's new to her and still she's swimming. Do you know what I mean? That's incredible.
Yeah. That's really interesting what you said just then about being a nighttime gay, so to speak, because I do think that so much of the time we are raised in a way that is designed to demarcate parts of ourselves for different parts of our lives. Like, we divide ourselves up. One of the things I write about is that we're born whole and then quickly broken into these small parts. And I kind of lean on this analogy with this Japanese art form, kintsugi, where they take this golden bowl and if it breaks into different pieces, they believe that if you put glue the pieces back together with like golden resin, then you have this new bowl that has these gold lines running through it. And like, that's the way I feel about identity, is that we break ourselves up, or we're broken up by lots of other like societal expectations. And then this exercise of our lives becomes finding a way of bringing these things back together. So for you, it was like, okay, well, you can be gay at nighttime, but like, as soon as the sun comes up and you're back to being Chris rather than gay Chris.
Yes.
When actually, and in fact, there's no difference between the two. But because of the way that we are conditioned, we deploy these different parts of ourselves at different times because it feels like the right thing to do.
Yeah, well, I was reading this article because I always berate myself for being such a people pleaser. And I'm always like, oh, for God's sake, why can't you just walk into a room and like, you know, I don't know, it's just always on my mind. And then I was reading this lovely article about just, we are social animals. We are, it is ingrained in us to ingratiate ourselves with the group, and that's not going to change. And, you know, I was thinking of that article just because I read it the other day, of when you were describing your mum, like, you know, she's in that iftar But even then, you know, even though while it's not great for what's going on for her, she knows how to ingratiate herself to the group because it's deep within us, you know. And I think actually that's what a lot of internalized homophobia is that it's deep within me to make sure I appear. This is when I was 19 and I'm quote unquote through it now. But, you know, like, you know, it's deep ingrained within me to try and not appear gay unless I, at moments when I have to, i.e. I'm trying to get off with someone in a nightclub.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's code switching, isn't it, I think?
Yeah, and I think the other thing for me was just not being able to recognise the ways in which my gay identity was something that I could use it was a tool to be able to celebrate the other parts of me. I'd never thought about it like that. But like I love the queer community and I love being a part of it, but it's not everything that is me. And I'm equally proud of and celebrate my kind of Pakistani heritage. And although I'm not religious anymore, my Muslim heritage, seeing the way that people in the queer community are able to really own who they are and for it to empower them helped me not just live in my own queer skin, but to live in my skin full stop and to bring all these things and hold them together.
Yeah, because I remember you saying somewhere that it kind of gets up your nose that like people assume once you say you're gay, your religion is just then taken off you. You know, it's like, oh, well, you can't be religious then. Or you've left your heritage as a result of being gay, when actually that's not the case.
So for me, the faith was a... leaving faith or not necessarily following the rules was a personal choice. But I do find it problematic to make that assumption. And I guess it's because it reinforces a stigma and a stereotype and a hatred. Because actually our default should be that everyone can be whatever they want to be. And as soon as you set up a binary and say, oh, well, if you're going to join me in this club, then you can't also be a member of that club. Then you're helping to reinforce the idea that there is something inherently wrong with being gay. Because what you're saying is, actually, you can't be both. And it's dressed up as, oh, well, actually, the problem is with faith. But really what you're doing is you are adding fuel to that fire, because what you're perpetuating and you're reinforcing is the idea of this stigma that you can't be both. So I think that it's really important for people to be able to identify on their own terms what they choose to be and what they don't choose to be.
Let's end part one of the chat of all chats with lovely Mohsin. Hope you're loving it as much as I do. It only gets better in part two. So why don't you go and have a listen? It's on the feed.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Powered by Spirit Studios.